film and said that he was like the perfect Harry Potter, but his parents wanted him to focus on schoolwork instead of acting. So the casting directors, this is true, they tried over 5,000 boys for Harry Potter and they still couldn't settle on one. And it wasn't until genuine happenstance that the producer and the screenwriter for the Harry Potter movies went to a movie together, and Daniel Radcliffe and his father happened to be in that same theater. So then, like, in person, just randomly, they managed to slowly convince his father to let him take the role. And if that's not, like, serendipitous, I don't know what else is.
Charms she did possess. Now this did happen once upon a time when things were not so complex, and how he worshipped the ground she walked. And when he looked in her eyes, he became obsessed. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the feelings I feel. Love was stronger than the power so dark a prince could have within his keeping. His spells to weave and steal a heart within her breast but only sleeping. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the feelings I feel. I love you oh so much, and lay my heart at the foot of your dress. She said, don't you know that storybook loves always have a happy ending? Then he swooped her up just like in the books, and on his stallion they rode. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the feelings I feel.
Maybe like not my favorite song that we will be playing today, but I certainly hope you all recognize it because it is the song from The Princess Bride. It is definitely my favorite book here. It is maybe my favorite movie here, and all of these stories are really close to my heart, so I feel like that's saying something. The thing about The Princess Bride book itself, it's kind of hard to explain. It's written by William Goldman, who wrote the screenplay for the film, as well as, you know, the screenplays for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Heat, Chaplin. He's a pretty prolific screenwriter. But the book, it'll say that it is abridged by or translated by or something like that for William Goldman. It won't say that it's, like, written by him. The entire book is written through the lens that it is actually an old Florin text, you know, like the fake country in the movie, that was so dull and dry that he had to republish it with, and like the quote he keeps using throughout is only the good parts. So you'll get like the story of The Princess Bride, but then you'll also get all of these footnotes in there that are like, here I cut out 30 pages describing trees because they were super dull and boring and no one wanted to read that. So, you know, in the movie adaptation, the premise of the grandfather reading the book to the grandson is kind of their take on this original story that Goldman created. And there's like this little I guess, background story, maybe. It's not really spread out throughout it, but there's a foreword and, like, author's note at the end. And they're both really long, but they're talking about, like, how he tried to read it to his son and his son hated it. So it's kind of like that mirroring. I also did get, like, the anniversary edition, whatever, of the book. So there's a newer foreword by Goldman, like, post Princess Bride movie release. And he talks about, like, going to museums and looking at the real six-fingered sword with Mandy Patinkin, or, like, going to the real Cliffs of Insanity to shoot on location. The whole thing is very tongue-in-cheek and ridiculous in true Princess Bride fashion, but it is a really awesome book, and considering all those ways that they were able to adapt this kind of author's take on it lens is impressive. It makes it more faithful to the novel. A big part of the skill of the film itself and these adaptations is, of course, that they have the same screenwriter and author, which is reasonable that it can't be done all the time, but it is a massive, massive boon when it can be. And it's just such a beloved film and story. If you haven't read the book, I have to recommend it. It is so fantastic, and they do have a few scenes that aren't in the movie, so if you're ever itching for more Princess Bride, it's right there for you. Next up, though, another very deeply beloved, close to many hearts, is The Hobbit. I don't know at this point what could make you, like, respect me any less or say that I have good taste, but I'm gonna try to make you think that it's just terrible at this point. Because for the longest time, I really hated the Lord of the Rings movie and story. And let me defend myself. This was a lot of me carrying over resentment from when I was, like, 9. My dad read me The Hobbit twice as a kid, and at that point, Lord of the Rings was boring compared to The Hobbit. It was, like, a stupid sequel from the awesome original book. And The Hobbit will always be closer to my heart, because, like I said, my dad read it to me. I grew up on it. I did not grow up on Lord of the Rings. But I have come to see the light. I respect Lord of the Rings as I should, but again, The Hobbit is very nostalgic to me. I also haven't read Lord of the Rings. I swear, I'm working my way through, like, A Song of Ice and Fire, like the Game of Thrones books. So I'm doing my fantasy homework. I'll get to Lord of the Rings at one point. But anyway, we're talking about The Hobbit right now. I am so sorry. The most insane thing to me about all of these movies is that Benedict Cumberbatch plays Smaug. Smaug, Smaug, however you want to say it. Again, bedtime story. My dad said Smaug. It is Smaug. You can Google Cumberbatch doing mocap for Smaug, like, as a dragon, and it's exactly what you expect. He's, like, crawling on the ground and making these weird dragon, like, it's really funny to watch, but then you're like, that's acting. That's capital A acting. Peter Jackson reworked the entire shooting schedule to accommodate for Martin Freeman to play Bilbo. He was always Peter Jackson's first choice for the character, but other options, and these are crazy to me. I can't imagine the story with any of these other people as Bilbo. They include Daniel Radcliffe, Shia LaBeouf, Eddie Redmayne, James McAvoy, and Tobey Maguire. Like, all very good actors, all actors that I like in other roles, but just picture any of them as Bilbo instead of Martin Freeman.
In the night, the like torches blazed with light. Thank you.
So much to say about those three pieces of score. They're so dear to my heart. That Hobbit piece before Old Friends is like in my personal Criterion collection of score pieces. I could listen to that one on loop for probably hours. I love that piece. I'm sorry, I know we're over talking about the Hobbit, but that's just a beautiful piece of music. Anyway, let's move on to those last two pieces of score. They are both from American Fiction. If you listened to CinemaScope last year, you know that this was, like, pretty easily my favorite movie of 2023. Since I saw it for the first time last December, so not even a year ago, I have seen the film 4 times. I've read the book over the summer. I cannot get enough of this story at all. It is so good. It did win Adapted Screenplay last year, which was, like, maybe one of the most deserved Oscars of the year, in my opinion. This script is absolutely excellent. But if you don't know, this is a film about a black author played by Jeffrey Wright. So good. I love this movie. Can you tell? Okay. It's about a black author who cannot get publishers to buy his book because they aren't, like, quote unquote, black enough. And then he gets super frustrated and writes basically a parody book about drugs and gangs and violence and all these, like, terrible stereotypes as, like, this stupid satire. And then the publishers don't see that it's a satire, and they think it's genuine, and they become obsessed with it. There's a line he has in the movie where he's like, the dumber I act, the richer I become, and that's basically the crux of the film. Anyway, super great movie, incredibly intelligent book. It's called Erasure. It is written by Percival Everett, and I love that man just as much. I read a New Yorker interview with him, and what I loved is that he's basically exactly who you think he'll be if you've seen the movie or read his book or any of his other books. He's basically Monk, like Jeffrey Wright's character in the movie. He's just sarcastic. He's kind of done with everything. And he's just like doing things for his own personal amusement. Like he's smarter than everyone else and he knows that he's smarter than everyone else. So he doesn't really bother with them. It doesn't make him necessarily a great guy, but it makes him a really interesting person to see someone talk to, like an interview. Anyway, I will say, of course, I am more familiar with the movie, having seen it 4 times in the last 10 months, but I do like how it handled some of our lead relationships more than in the book. It takes way more tender and optimistic approach as opposed to the book's cynical, take no prisoners, everything is terrible type of thing. Both the movie and the book are good, but sometimes I do want to see two estranged brothers talking about self-love instead of a really sad wedding blowout, which you do get in the book. So if you're looking for something softer, watch the movie. If you're looking for just like a really intelligent critique on how society like monotonizes racism, read the book and watch the movie. The movie does a good job too. Anyway, I could talk about American Fiction forever, But let's move on to another Oscar winner last year, which I also read the book for. It is called Poor Things. Most people don't actually seem to realize that it was based on a book. Whenever I bring it up, they thought that it was an original Yorgos Lanthimos film. And it does have, like, all of his weirdness in it. So that's a reasonable mistake. What's interesting about the Poor Things book is that it is kind of written like The Princess Bride. It is written with the lens of being a historical document that was uncovered back in the 1800s. I actually think that out of all of these book and movie relationships we're talking about today, this was maybe the best adapted. I won't say that it's the most faithful, but if you've seen the movie, you know that Bella Baxter, our lead, Emma Stone, our weird science creation, goes on this, you know, cross-continent journey. And the film is split into different locations she goes to as she learns more about herself and humanity and society. And really, the book is paced quite differently, and most of the people she meets and the places she goes to are completely different between the film and the movie. But more than most adaptations I've seen where I'm familiar with, you know, what it's based on and what it is now, this one feels so loyal to the world of the book. It's hard to explain. Every scene in the movie feels like it was just a cutout scene from the book, and vice versa. It's hard to explain, but there's a really cohesive element between these two pieces that can really easily get lost in adaptation, especially if you're not going like scene by scene by scene, which is what some adaptations do tend to do. These are all original takes that just somehow feel so effortlessly embedded in the context of the book. It's really interesting to watch and then read after. I'm sure it is just as satisfying to read first and watch after, but of course that is not what I did.
I didn't care. More than words can say. If I didn't care, would I feel this way? If this isn't love, then why do I thrill? And what makes my head go round and round while my heart stands still? If I didn't care, would it be the same? Would my every prayer begin and end with just your name? And would I be sure that this is love beyond compare? Would all this be true if I didn't care for you?
If I didn't care, honey child, more than words can say. If I didn't care, would I feel this way? Darling, if this isn't love, then why do I thrill so much? And what is it that makes my head go round and round while my heart just stands still so much?
If I didn't care, would it be the same? Would my every prayer begin and end with just your name? And would I be sure that this is love beyond compare? Would all this be true if I didn't care for you?
I got a feeling of the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do. All I do is sit and sigh. Oh Lord, that last long day she said goodbye. Well Lord, I thought I would cry. She'll do me, she'll do you. She's got that kind of loving. Lord, I love to hear her when she called me sweet. Daddy, such a beautiful dream. I hate to think it all over. I've lost my heart, it seems. I've grown so used to you somehow. Well, I'm nobody's sugar daddy now. And I'm lonesome. I got the lovesick blues. Well, I'm in love with a beautiful gal. That's what's the matter with me. Well, I'm in love with a beautiful gal. But she don't care about me. Lord, I tried and I tried to keep her satisfied. But she just wouldn't stay. So now that she is leaving, this is all I can say. I got a feeling called the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do. All I do is sit and sigh. Oh Lord, that last long day she said goodbye. Well Lord, I thought I would cry. She'll do me, she'll do you. She's got that kind of loving. Lord, I love to hear her when she calls me sweet. Daddy, such a beautiful dream. I hate to think it all over. I've lost my heart, it seems. I've grown so used to you somehow. Lord, I'm nobody's sugar daddy now. And I'm lonesome. I got the love big blue.
All right, we are moving on to some Shawshank Redemption. Get some Stephen King up in here. Now, not to make you lose even more respect for me, I know I obviously have very terrible taste. This was the first Stephen King book I ever read, and I read it in high school because the movie is awesome, and I absolutely hated it. I thought it was so dull and poorly written. So anyway, there's my bad taste. That's neither here nor there. The movie, I can always get behind. Morgan Freeman is absolutely iconic in it. He has said himself that this is his favorite movie that he has been in. Of course, obviously, Morgan Freeman is great in it, but in the book, he is described as a middle-aged Irishman with gray hair. That's probably why his character is nicknamed Red. They considered Clint Eastwood, Paul Newman, Gene Hackman, Harrison Ford, and Robert Redford for the role, but the director always had Freeman in mind. The line about his nickname being Red because he's Irish was kept in the final film as like a little bit of a joke. So we all know that Stephen King obviously has really weird relationships with his film adaptations. He hated The Shining and afterwards chose to like stay completely out of the business. Not because he doesn't respect it and not because he doesn't enjoy the, idea that his films get to take on a new life or his books get to take on a new life, but it's more because he can appreciate that it is a different art form from the one that he knows best, and he can respect that he doesn't necessarily have the instincts that people need to bring to filmmaking the same way that filmmakers might not have the instincts they need to bring to writing a novel. He never cashed the $5,000 check for rights for Shawshank Redemption, and then years after the film came out, Stephen King framed the check and mailed it to the director with the note, "In case you ever need bail money, love, Steve." So there's definitely still some good vibes there. Next up, not in the same vein really at all, but we're going to talk about The Hunger Games. Another massive cultural touchstone, regardless of your own opinions. It was 100% riding, you know, the YA coattails of Harry Potter and Twilight, and it was such a hit that it prompted all those other ones that you've seen, you know, Maze Runner, Divergent, even Uglies that just came out on Netflix. Not to go on a tangent, but like, I didn't read that book, but I 100% knew girls that did read that book, and I have heard that it is terrible on Netflix, but again, it feels like my kind of terrible movie, so I kind of want to watch it. We'll see. Anyway, Hunger Games. I do like this movie a lot, and I did read the book, so I am biased. Jennifer Lawrence had her background in indie films, as I'm sure you know, and this was her first really major one. For the first Hunger Games movie, she was paid $500,000. For the second one, she was paid 20 times that at $10 million. Donald Sutherland, who also did die this year, unfortunately, a beloved classic Canadian actor, plays President Snow in this film and all the other ones. He originally wanted the role because it reminded him of Kubrick's Paths of Glory, and he wanted to be part of something like that. He saw a little bit of the script, and then this is honestly one of the coolest things I've ever seen, learning about movies for the show. He sent a letter to the director on what this role means to him and what this character means to the relation in the rest of the story. Not only did that letter get him the part, but it also prompted two more scenes to be written into the script based on his insights of the character of President Snow and what he meant for the rest of the story and how his character type functioned. Honestly, it seems like it was basically an academic paper analyzing this character. And I'm not trying to hate on new actors. I'm sure there are many actors that do things like that, but I feel like this is just some sort of classical respect for the art that we don't always see these days, and I thought that was really cool. I also learned, this is also some outside of filmmaking work that he brought to the role. But Jennifer Lawrence worked with Zoe Kravitz on X-Men First Class. And Zoe Kravitz's father, Lenny Kravitz, who plays Cinna in the Hunger Games movies, tried to learn as much about Lawrence as possible from his daughter to make their relationship seem more natural on camera. And I do think it worked. They have one of the most charming friendships until, you know, I mean, spoilers, I guess. Things don't necessarily work out for him.
Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say, who murdered three. Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where a dead man called out for his love to flee? Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where I told you to run so we'd both be free? Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight night in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where a necklace of hope side by side with me? Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where I told you to run so we both be free? Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say we murdered three. Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree?
All right, we have one movie story IP left to talk about today, and it is Jason Bourne. I watched all of the movies for the first time this summer. I loved them. I like him so much more than Ethan Hunt, Mission Impossible. I still like Mission Impossible. Don't get me wrong. Still a fun time. But I do love the Jason Bourne movies. I also have read the first book. Only the first one. I haven't made it past there. But they're just a good time. Sometimes I really need heavy testosterone action movies. And that's exactly what this does. I love Matt Damon in it. I will say Paul Greengrass, I would 100% donate him a tripod because some of that shaky camera work is not it for me. I'll also say that I kind of liked Bourne Legacy. I know, I can't get any of the names straight in my head. So if you're not completely certain, like I wasn't until I just Googled it, that's the one with Jeremy Renner that Matt Damon isn't actually in. I know it's a controversial take. I don't hate Jeremy Renner. I think he's a mediocre actor. He's fine. I liked his film a lot. I like how they're expanding the universe. I would be so stoked if Matt Damon came back for another Bourne movie. There are so many books he could 100% do it. They're just a fun time. I don't have much to say about that. I'm sorry. Before we close up for today, though, and I will say we are closing with a song that I spent so much time driving to with, like, the volume all the way turned up because it's just such a stupid song that makes you feel so cool at the end of all the Bourne movies. Before we do that, some really quick housekeeping. Next week, right here on CinemaScope, if you're a McMaster student, I'm sure you know that we are going into reading week. And as you know, if you've listened before, CinemaScope always likes to do some sort of study music for reading weeks and midterms and exams. So I am really hoping, I hope, it's going to be a lot of hard music to find, but if I can swing it, we are going to be studying next week to some Akira Kurosawa scores. Such good scores, but old music is hard to find. We will be doing scores anyway next week for a bit of a study session. I do also really quickly want to take a quick moment to shout out another show that is brand new to CFMU. I think it's maybe 2 weeks on at this point anyway. It is called Animation in Motion. It airs Tuesdays from noon to 1. It is hosted by one of my very dear friends. And if you like CinemaScope and if you like talking about movies and media and all of that awesome stuff, you should 100% check it out. That host, Karen Sun, is talking about animated TV shows, animated movies, animated content, anime, all of that good stuff. It is an absolute joy to listen to. And once again, I feel even more indebted to CFMU for giving creatives the space to talk about art that they love. That's my favorite thing to do. I would love to remind you that you can reach out if you ever want to on Instagram at cfmu.cinemascope. You can reach out on TikTok at cinemascope.cfmu. I'm sure if you put any combination of that together on either platform, you'll find me, hopefully. You can always also email at cfmu.cinemascope@gmail.com. I'm sorry I'm saying this all disjointed. I'm trying to remember the names myself. But I would love to reach out and connect with you. And if you ever want to suggest a theme or a movie I should be talking about or anything at all, I am so happy to talk to you. Like, honest to God, please do it. I would be so stoked. Either way, though, I'm just thankful that you came out and listened today. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you have an excellent rest of your Thursday. I have been your host for CinemaScope, Scarlett Sapia, right here on 93.3 CFMU-FM. And now enjoy some Moby.
any lights. Dirty basements, dirty noise, dirty places coming through. Extreme worlds alone, did you ever like it, Pam? I would stand in line for this. There's always room in life for this. So many heartaches, so many faces, so many dirty things you couldn't even believe. I would stand in line for this. It's always good in life for this.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, fermented foods, very nutritious, very magic.
So you just shred up your cabbage, basically. You add a certain amount of salt by weight, and you kind of scrunch it together, you let it sit together, and what the salt does is it draws the liquid out of the cabbage. That becomes the environment in which these lactobacilli, which exist on the surface of the cabbage already, can start to grow and proliferate.
Taking stock of biological diversity using DNA barcodes.
It's ridiculous when you think about it that you take a liter of water. How much life can there be in such a small volume of water? And it's literally hundreds or even thousands of different species that we find.
And a frightening vision of a warming planet, hothouse Earth.
We propose that there could be what we call a planetary threshold, which is once those dominoes start falling, you can't stop it.
Welcome to another edition of Classical Today, the show that makes a connection between modern and classical music. I'm your host, Roger Corr, and thanks for joining us on this Thursday afternoon. To begin, this CD was selected as a 2007 Grammy nominee as the Best Classical Crossover Album. I didn't even know that such a category existed until I came upon the CD, which, by the way, the Classical Crossover Award for the Grammys has been given out since 1999.